So our speaker this evening is Judy Rossi. She has been married to her husband, John, for 38 years. He's a retired Army officer. Judy has been a Bible study teacher, a workshop leader, and international conference and retreat speaker since 1986. She addresses women in the areas of marriage, parenting, and other women issues in both military and civilian churches and ministries. She's written two books, Enhancing Your Marriage, a Women's Bible Study, and Raising Responsive Children, a Bible Study for Moms. She and John have just self-published Enhancing Your Marriage, a Couples Bible Study. Judy and John have two married daughters, Dana and Leslie, both married to wonderful men. And they have amongst them five grandchildren, one newly born. And Dana is also pregnant with another on the way. So please welcome Judy Rossi.
Thank you, Sarah. Really exciting to be here. Thank you. Can you all hear me? Oh, my goodness. There you go. It's one of those. So it's kind of hard to... Either way, there's probably going to be a bit of a void. If I'm loud, can you hear me? Everybody can hear me? Good. Well, I was really pleased when Alyssa called me and asked me to speak on a very hot topic. It's about being calm. And discipline sort of falls into the parameter of staying calm, because that's what makes it most effective. And so one of the things that I can remember when I was, I think Dana was probably about five and Leslie was three. And after I'd had one of my out-of-control tirades for something that they had done, wasn't evil, it was just kid stuff, I can remember going into my bedroom and falling on my knees and saying, "Lord, if you don't do something with me, I'm going to ruin these kids." And I meant every word. It's interesting that there's no magic medicine for the perfect child. Because if anybody could create one, God could, and he'd use it on his own kids. But he did give us a mighty manual for the maturing child, and that's the one he uses to raise us. And I'll be flat straight with you. I love the Lord, and I love this book. And it's brought me through some really tough scrapes. And it is raising me well. And even at my age, I'm still being raised. All right? I will be his kid until the day I die. I'll still be parented by him. And so the way I approached my parenting after I realized that somebody had to change was that I began to take note of how he was raising me and saw that that's how he wanted me to raise my child, my children. And a process began, and that's where the book came from, actually. And whether our children are our natural or biological children, our adopted children, stepchildren, or a combo meal of all of the above, they all have one thing in common. It's no mistake that they're in your family. There's not one was a surprise, an afterthought, a mistake, or an anomaly. They all belong in your family. And there's a reason for it. And I began to think about what God puts into child rearing, and I came up with the three things that are on your page there. One is careful thought. And we have a God with an infinite, we can't even comprehend where his thoughts go, but he finishes the work he begins, and that's what we're called to do as moms. When that baby's born, our work is started. Actually, before, because I can remember kind of nurturing my baby even in the womb. How many sang to your babies in the womb, or spoke to your babies in the womb, or had dad come up and touch and talk? And maybe the baby would jump or just move. I loved that. Well, we began that work, and we raise our children to release them. And we really have to wrap our minds around that reality, because it's true. We can never hang on to our babies for life. We raise them to release them into responsible adulthood that they can begin to embrace to raise their own family. So careful thought goes into his raising us. And the other was purposeful planning. He created us to do things that he'd planned for us to do long ago. And hones us toward those plans. And the third is the well-orchestrated opportunities for consistent application of what he teaches us. And one of my favorite scriptures is that all scriptures God breathes. That means it's made spiritually alive and is useful for teaching. How many of us are teaching our kids? Yeah, I'm not talking about homeschooling. I'm talking about teaching them from the time they get up in the morning. You're modeling, you're teaching, they're learning. It's for rebuking. We're going to rebuke our children too. We're going to correct a wrong as well, and we're going to train them in right doing. Once I truly wrap my mind around why I was gifted with two beautiful daughters to raise, I was no longer afraid to parent, because that was the thing that scared me when I hit the floor that night. Parenting scared me. I was afraid to be the mom. I was afraid for a lot of reasons. But once I realized what my responsibility was and who was backing me up, I was no longer afraid that I'd damage my kids' self-esteem, because I began to raise them instead with self-respect. And I will tell you, there's a big difference between raising a child with self-esteem, it's all about me, and raising a child with self-respect. I respect myself enough to take care of you and to not do this and to discern against that or with that or about that. I was no longer afraid that my kids wouldn't like me anymore if I disappointed them with a well-reasoned no, because I realized that there's a maturing value to disappointment. A lot of us want to protect our kids from disappointment. Disappointment's really a heart builder. I was no longer afraid that if I disciplined them, I'd lose my buddy status with them, until I realized that God didn't ordain me to be my kids' buddies, at least not until adulthood. And we do everything together, especially shop. Great buddy system we got there. And I was no longer afraid to discipline in accordance with God's precepts, because those precepts were unpopular, because I now understood what it meant to please God rather than it meant to please man. And as I began to walk within this system, this new reality for me, calm began to reign in our household. I was learning to replace wimpy parenting with purposeful parenting. And it is a process. Are you realizing that? That parenting really is a process? It just doesn't come on you now. You've got parenting 101 because you had the baby. No. And you didn't get the parenting gene. That didn't come with the package either. So it becomes a process of learning and assimilating what you learn. And so what I came up with were the four things that really helped me in my parenting process. And it doesn't matter what age you start, doesn't matter what the age your children are, all of these four can be begun to be implemented when you walk out that door. First one is, and I call this the 90-degree dynamic, because again, remember when I was telling you that being as a child of God, he's parenting me, and that was giving me information about how I should parent my kids. So I call that the 90-degree dynamic. And so, because God knows me completely, and he does, he says he knows us perfectly, every hair on our heads, and that changes in milliseconds. One's grown in, one's falling out. He knows me perfectly. Then we should strive to know our children as completely as possible. And there's only one really great comparative to kids or to people, and that's snowflakes. What do snowflakes have in common? Nothing. Each snowflake, and you got to think about it. No, we didn't get much snow this year, for which I was really disappointed. We've already had that talk. But even in the wimp snowstorms we've had, there are a bazillion flakes. And not two flakes are alike. Well, that's the same with children, people. And so each child is a uniquely created individual inside and out. Scripture's very clear about that. I remember my mother lamenting to me many times in my adulthood, especially when I was on the south side of my walk with Christ, and she said, "I don't know what I did wrong. I raised you all alike. I had two other sisters, and we were a real heartache to my family." And as I began to really ponder, "I don't know what I did wrong, I raised you all alike," I began to look at how I was raising my girls and thinking, maybe that's what happened. How do you raise two completely different individuals the same way? So I began to chart my children's personalities. I actually have these charts on my website, and the website's at the bottom of your page. And I did three things. The first thing I did was observe each of the girls, her conduct, her gifts, her talents, her strengths, her weaknesses, character flaws, and in some cases study them, not just with my eyes, my heart. It's one thing to watch your child misbehave, and it makes a, you know, it's another thing to study a child with your heart. Second thing I did was to use these observations to assess their character. And then I prayerfully parented to each child's uniqueness. I began to notice that the way I was really thinking about Leslie wasn't really Leslie at all. And all of the thoughts I had about Dana, there were some things that I really needed to wrap my mind around because she was a more intricate child. Leslie was my free spirit, kind of all out there. Dana, not so much. I needed to know this older child better. These observations and assessments are ongoing. So it might have started when they were probably in their late grade school ages, but then it changed. Middle school came along. And so that process of observing and assessment continued. And then grade school became high school, and things really began to happen there, and I really need to have my thoughts on them and what they were doing and how they were processing the things going on in their lives. Because they were changing continually. You'd be surprised who your children really are and when you grasp a vision of who they can become and parent to their uniqueness. And what's the goal in knowing our kids as God knows us? The goal is relationship. Relationship. Right now, if your kids, I'm assuming, seeing so many young moms, a lot of you have really young children. Well, it's our job to keep those reins really tight. You know, rules and regs, limitations, behavioral parameters are absolutely necessary. We all need that, of course, whether children or adults. But young children need them the most. And then when we have them at that young age and we have those parameters, as they get older, we can give them more and more freedoms. And that's the idea. But oftentimes we invert that. This is a parenting of love and logic they call the inverted V, where we give our two-year-olds all of this freedom and they're running the household. And then as they get older, we're reining them in. And it's all the opposite. So we need to know how we're building relationship, because those rules and regs are to begin to morph into relationship as you grow into those teen years. Relationship builds trust, and that's the cornerstone of the teen and adult years that we have with our kids. And throughout, God will teach us how to parent with grace and firm mercy. Those were the two things that I had to really understand. I didn't understand parenting with grace, but that's seeking the wisdom of God to choose our battles. Some things you just say, I'm going to cover this one with grace. And that's kind of from that 1 Peter 4, 8-11 passage that's your scripture this year. Love makes up for practically anything. Well, there are some things that we do let go. Doesn't mean we let things slide that are the ones that really count. It means examining our own motives for our list of no's and don'ts. Have you ever heard from your kid, you know, Mom, I just can't please you? Did you ever hear that from your kid? Or maybe you said it to your mom or thought it. And if you have a house full of no's and don'ts, that's very defeatist for a child. And I hearken to, now everybody here is familiar with the Ten Commandments. All God gave him was Ten Commandments. But as time went on, it ended up to be 613, all of them in Leviticus, and one commandment for each letter that it took to make up, each Hebrew letter that it took to make up the Ten Commandments. Can you tell me how easy it was for the Israelites to please God? And it was deliberate, because it really was setting the stage for grace, when we know we just can't get there from here. Grace? grace. It's great stuff in a household. And I began to understand how important it was to exercise more grace with my girls than that heavy hand of authority. As a matter of fact, I can remember that sense in my brain screaming, Judy, you don't enjoy your girls. Enjoy my girls. I'm the mom. I'm not supposed to enjoy my girls. But then it hit me. I really didn't. I was so busy being the authority, the authoritarian. And that was going to change too. Too many battles. So I learned to lighten up. And I learned to enjoy my children. Firm Mercy says, this is going to hurt you more than it hurts me, and I'm okay with that. That's the firm part. Because the outcome of your choices, daughter or son, in other words, your life, is too important to me. That's mercy. Firm mercy may be painful at times now, but without it, future destruction may await our kids. Parenting with grace and firm mercy will prepare them for the real world. And I don't think oftentimes parents study think in terms of the real world. We want them happy. We want them to make us look good, so we want them to have good grades. And we do everything we can to make sure those grades are good grades. And we'll travel to who knows where and back to ensure their success. All the while creating not the person that might have been whom God intended them to be. The real world is out there, and we need to prepare our kids for the real world. That means working. That means perhaps doing chores. Oh, my goodness, chores. You know, for free. Just because they're in a part of our family, and it's part of what we do when we're a family. Second, because God permits us the freedom to make choices, we should permit our children the freedom to make choices at as early an age as possible. And even Joshua gave that whole crew of Israelites that. Choose this day. God gives us that choice. There's no better gift to a child than to let him or her learn to make age-appropriate, make sure you get that, age-appropriate choices, starting out with the simplest things, because their choices will get more difficult and challenging as they get older. Making age-appropriate choices allows a child to feel respected, capable, empowered. How many here have ever heard your child say, I did it? Now, my little Eli, who at the time was not quite three, kept saying to me, I will do it, Jamie, I will do it. And of course, I wanted to do it for him because I knew he couldn't do it. But I stepped back. I said, okay, go for it, Eli. And he worked it, and he worked it, and he worked it. And I looked at that tenacity and I thought, this is an almost 3-year-old and he is determined to do it. And when he was done, and it was work, he was one, I did it. There's just nothing that you can do for a child that does for a child. And that success of knowing that they have overcome a barrier. We got to know when we get in the way of that, Mom. We got to know when we keep our kids from not only getting over the barrier, but even approaching the barrier. Because we're afraid they're going to fail. Society says failure's not good. Failure's not healthy. I beg to differ. I will tell you that failure is probably one of God's greatest tools for maturation. And Mom, how we deal with it will matter in terms of how that failure works for our kids or against them. Even this morning, it was kind of neat. This afternoon I was with my 2-year-old, Joey, and I just changed his diaper, and he was pulling up stood him up on his feet, was getting ready to pull up his pants, and he says, no, Jamie, I'm going to do it. And I said, okay. So he's struggling, and I'm just standing there, and he's struggling, and he says, Jamie, help me? Mm-hmm. Of course, sweetheart. And that's the other side of it. When you release them to work, and you show that you have confidence in them, and they need help, they trust you enough to ask you for it. That's a very good thing. 20 years from now, 15 years from now, 10 years from now, depending upon how old your kids are. Making good choices is both caught and taught. Children don't just start making good choices when they turn 18. So they learn when, first off, we model. When we model good choices, they're taking it in. We might not think our kids are paying any attention. I beg to differ. They're taking notes in their brains. and our kids observe them, and they file away for later use. And sometimes we model good stuff, and sometimes we don't. They also learn when we teach and guide good choices by providing reasonable options. And I'm going to give you a few examples here. And key in on the word reasonable, okay? Examples for a young child. And by young child, I'd say in the toddler age and stage, because again, my 2-year-olds, and I have two of them, know they can discern colors and things, and so I would say, or do you want to wear the yellow shirt, or do you want to wear the green shirt, or the red shirt, or the blue shirt? Now that is a really simple choice, but can they make that choice? Okay, do you want to wear the shirt with the long sleeves? And if your kid fights wearing jackets outside, you pull out 2 jackets. Do you want to wear this jacket or this jacket when you go out today to play? Whoa. They get to make a choice instead of fighting, saying, no jacket, I don't want to wear a jacket. It's not probably because they don't want to wear a jacket. Choice. Choices are so empowering. For an older child, would you like to play with Johnny today or Jimmy? Would you want him to come here, or do you want to go over there to play? And we did that a lot with friends, and we'd shift kids all the time, my friends and I. So, and the other one, do you want to take gymnastics or do you want to take ballet? Choices. Examples for teens. I don't know if they're too young here for mothers who are samples of examples. Perhaps any mothers here, mothers of teens? Okay, well, let me give you a few. Are you considering college, vocational training, or getting a full-time job when you graduate from high school? What's the message? I am raising a responsive young man, and when he turns 18, he's going to make a choice that's going to make a life someday for his family. You don't bar that. You build him up toward that from the time he's this high. So in fact, I even heard the expression that I've used before tonight. You don't mother the man out of your boy. This is what makes dad really important in this whole process of mothering. And if dad isn't in the home, he still weighs in on a lot of these big decisions. So, we model. If it's college or vocational training, let's examine the places, your options, that are within our affordability. Boy, isn't that a good training. I've seen parents kill themselves financially to send children to places, and it just, is that necessary? I can remember when our girls were young adults, and they were getting ready for college, John and I went to the budget floor, and we said, okay, let's decide now, based on what we've saved over the years, what we can afford for college. And so we then set out the parameters. This is what we've got. And then we bought a program from News and World Report, I think that was it. Anyway, it was where you could plug in what you thought you would like in a college, small college, large college, girls' college, co-ed college, in the country, in the city, all kinds of things you could plug in, and then it would spit out all your options based on your financial parameters. And each one of them came up with great options, and they chose from within those options. It's, again, a healthy message. We're not made of money. We were never made of money. And yet, some children today have this sense of entitlement that mom and dad ought to pay for everything, and, oh, by the way, if I just don't happen to get a job when I graduate, or if I graduate from high school and I just feel like hanging around for a while, because they will be back. From early on, and this is what's really important about choices and about committing to choices. It's the essence of the training. Committing to their choices is the essence of the training. Even a little one. You want a peanut butter and jelly or a hot dog? And you give the little one a hot dog because I want a hot dog. And he gets a hot dog on his plate. Oh, no, Mommy. I've changed my mind. I want a peanut butter. I'm sorry, honey. But this is your choice. I know you'll enjoy it. But if you choose not to eat it, you'll have a nice hunger for dinner when we sit down tonight. You teach your children from that high to commit to their choices. And if a child changes his mind when he makes a choice, we can be so quick to let him off the hook that the only thing he learns over time is how easy it is to walk away from a commitment. Just look around you today. Nothing is more empowering to a child than succeeding at a choice and responding with that, "I did it." When children who learn to choose from a young age are teens and adults, they're more likely to seek your guidance and counsel, and they're more likely to commit to wise choices, even if they aren't always fun ones. That's the goal. So consider, how might you be manipulating or making your child's choices for them, instead of guiding them toward making age-appropriate choices? You might want to ask yourself, am I a control freak? Or maybe it's just more convenient for me to make the choice for the child. You pull the clothes out, and you say, "Wear this today," and your 15-year-old says, "But Mom." Or maybe making the choices for them is a time saver. And that's all true, but I got to tell you something about raising children. It takes a lot of time. And you might not get to do the things you want to do because something's come up, and now you've got to give this child or these children a certain amount of time to make something positive happen, and thought and prayer, so that something might have to change. One of the things in my younger years as a basically new mom, being kind of ball and chain to this child that I wanted for 2 years, I thought, I can't even go to the bathroom without this child coming with me. And forget about shopping, which was one of my, speaking of talents, that was one of my talents. So, you'll know if you're guiding your child or controlling your child. Guidance inspires interaction and cooperation. Control inspires passive aggression and outright rebellion down the road. Some of you may have even been there. Maybe I'm singing where you used to be. And if we're control freaks when they're young, it will continue until they leave your nest, if they leave your nest, when they'll be manipulating and controlling you. So remember, ladies, raising your children is about raising them into real life. Real life. What happens outside there when they're adults. The most important choice a child can have is that of obedience. Our part is to permit our children to choose obedience and respond wisely when they don't. Choices are valid across the parenting spectrum. Everybody's got choices, but not everybody gets to make them. This is frequently the case in a parent-child relationship as it relates to obedience. It's also the case in the Heavenly Father relationship with His. Choose this day, Judy, who you'll serve. We're also to set standards and clearly state limits. This is good. You know, it's kind of interesting. I was working with a couple, a gal yesterday, and she was talking about how sort of things just sort of fell apart at home, and I began to ask her questions, and I said, "Well, it sounds to me like you had an expectation." "Oh, yes, it was a big expectation." And I said, "Did you communicate this expectation?" "No, I just assumed, ... Ladies, as a mom, don't assume your kids can read your mind anymore. I'm going to get my marriage hat on here for a minute. Then you can assume that your husband can read your mind. Guys like it straight. Say what you mean what you say. They can take it. They really prefer it. We're not real good at that. But it doesn't change with our children. If you have a certain behavior you want them to begin to embrace, then you've got to communicate it. I'm not saying beat it into them. I'm absolutely against that. The beating in part. There's nothing in Scripture that says beat them. All right? So, we're also to set these standards, to clearly make them, and then we let them choose whether or not they're going to adhere to the standard. And when a limit's been violated, what do we oftentimes do? We resort to what? When they don't behave the way we expect them to, even with a communicated standard. We'll nag. Anybody here nag? No? Okay, just checking. What about warnings? Oh, who are the lovers of warnings? How many hundred here? Okay. What about, let's see here, cajoling? Or the big one, bribing. "I'll give you this if you do that." Oh, boy. Then we do what they didn't. When, excuse me, then we do what they didn't, which is easier than revising our approach to ensure success. This scenario plays over and over in our homes, and it still doesn't work, even when we do it longer, harder, faster, louder, and we wonder what's going wrong. When that happens, that is the big cue that something about how you're parenting must change. Must. Not maybe. Must. This is evidence that something must change. Okay, let me give you a few examples. Putting away toys for the little bitties. Getting chores done for the bigger bitties. When you put your toys away, you may play with Jimmy, play with your Game Boy, watch TV, whatever that reward is. Note that I didn't say, you can't watch TV until you finish your chores, or until you clean your room, or until you put your toys away. Note the negativity, and note how that might push the defiance button in your child. I mean, just think of what that would do to you if a significant other approached you that way. It would have that same impact. Putting your toys away, when you put your toys away, you may do this. Or you may put your toys away, you may go to your room. That's a fair choice. Not you put your toys away or you're going to your room. I'm going to give you, and even preface it, I'm going to give you a choice. And you do it as calmly, all right? Because after all, the only reason we get ratcheted up is because we don't deal with it the very first time. We get into that nag mode. We get into that cajole mode. We get sucked into the ring. So I'm going to give you a visual here. Here's the ring. And little Johnny or Susie are in the ring. And they don't want to do what you want them to do. And so you get in there with them. And you resort to the cajoling and the bribing, and you pick something, the nagging. My encouragement to you is to let that visual spring up into your brain the very first time your guidance is ignored. And then you approach them with the choice. Okay, mommy's going to give you a choice. You may pick up your toys now, or you may go to your room. Which would you like to do? Well, that's given very matter-of-factly, isn't it? And especially for the little ones, I mean, they're going to think about it. I think I'd rather pick up my toys. And that really is, that works at every age. You just have to get creative about your choices and how you're going to express them to your kids. And it's not that hard, but it does take time, doesn't it? You've got to think. You've got to think about this child you're learning to know. What really matters to her? Because what matters to her doesn't matter at all to her sister. She doesn't give a flip if I take away her shopping privileges. But this one. So, when you say it once calmly, how will a child ever learn obedience if he or she doesn't get to choose it? If they choose wisely, we reinforce their wise choices with genuine praise. If they choose unwisely, then we have an opportunity to enhance their maturity. So how do we do this? Well, we discipline in a way that fits their unique little personalities. And one of those ways is I'm going to go right here to four for now, and then I'll get into the other one. But through natural consequences and created consequences. Natural consequences are a gift from God. There's nothing like them. As a matter of fact, if you're a really smart mom, you won't even try to add to them. We want to do and I'll just give you an example. Would you mind if I take my sweater off? I'm just distracted by my heat. Thank you. Sure, glad I. Okay. Okay. I was 8 years old. I had a buddy next door, and we used to go in the woods a lot together and play. Now, understand, this was almost 60 years ago. It was a long time ago, and there we didn't have the kid issue, perpetrator issue like we do today. My mom would open up that door, and you say, "Everybody out!" And we would go out, and we would play wherever we wanted. There are five houses, you know, within two blocks, and that's where we spend our time. And so she said, no woods today, because we had an issue. And so, but I met up with Linda, and I went into the woods anyway. One of the cool things about the woods was that we had a big, huge rock complex in the middle of the woods, and someone had hung a cord over that, and we could stick our feet in there, and we'd swing, 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 but you had to grab it with a stick, bring it over, stick your foot in it, and then start swinging. Well, and it was iron. What do you call that? Cords of... strands of iron, strands of metal. Well, I jumped, Linda got on first, I jumped on, and immediately a piece just stuck into my foot and dug into my foot. Well, and then, because we couldn't push off, we stopped right in the middle, away from the rock, 15 feet above the ground. I'm crying, Linda's crying, and we're yelling, help, help. Well, we don't do it here, so it was a far place away. And this hobo came up, saw that we were in trouble, took the stick, pulled us in, got us off, and we ran home. Well, who do you think? How could I hide that from my mother? I was crying, dirty, greasy, and very bloody. And that was a natural consequence she didn't even add to. She didn't say, I told you not to go in the woods. I told you this was going to happen. And she didn't take me and spank me. She said, get in the car. Got in the car. She took me to the ER. They shot me up with tetanus and all this other stuff and poured this nasty stuff on my foot. And that was a natural consequence. Now, that was a very broad natural consequence. But you've got to be looking out for these natural consequences that come and want to bite your kid back for a very bad decision. They are gifts. Use them wisely. And if you don't have natural consequences at the other end, be very aware of the created consequences that you make. Make sure that the created consequence, one, fits the crime, two, fits the child, that unique person that you are now parenting to, and is enforceable. You did this, you're going to be bound to your room for a month. Well, come on, that's unenforceable. You and I both know that. We're going to wimp out on that at any time. So natural consequences and created consequences are very effective when they're thought through thoroughly and implemented wisely and with a calm that shocks even you. One of the neat things about leveling a created consequence, like the child who might not want to go to school, and you know it's the child's not sick, but the child won't go to school, and this is one I just dealt with, a scenario I just dealt with not too long ago. So the child stayed home, and then he expected mom to write the excuse. No, I'm sorry, son. You made a bad choice. You and I both know that there was nothing wrong. And so you'll have to go and see what happens at school. And a lot happened at school. That's a great, that was a smart mom. It was a wise mom. And so we have to be, and I will tell you that probably, of course, this is the book that some of you have taken, and this book is one of my other favorites, Parenting with Love and Logic. If you had a chance to write that down, and this one is Love and Logic for Early Childhood. Good stuff. These two people do great work. Because God permits us to fail, this kind of goes along with that. We permit our children to fail. We talked about that. But our children failing. This is really a key to a beauty when it comes to their becoming healthy adults. How they get through the things that break their hearts, how they get through the disappointments that they themselves have created, how they get through the things that other people have done to them, that broke your heart, it's going to matter how you deal with it. And so I believe in this one verse that just has met me at every turn in my mothering when I wanted to be so defensive for my kids and get out there and be the mom, when in reality might be something that my child needed to face up to first. And that was, God would cause all things to work for good. All things to work for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. For those he foreknew, he predestined to become conformed into the image of his son. He wastes not one thing. He doesn't waste a tear. He doesn't waste a heartache. And he's ready and waiting to help us in our mothering. He's the author of it. So I want to thank you for the time that you gave me tonight. I know this was probably kind of like a fire hose, but I encourage you to continue to work where He has you right now, and that's being the mom for the children that He's placed in your home.